destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We're due there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God, he's coming at you!
Alright, when it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the cop.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman. What's the ish?
What's up, guys? That is right. My name is James Gutman, and you are tuned in to a special weekend edition of JG's Radio Free Insanity. Right now, it is the weekend of June the 3rd. 2006. You are tuned in right here at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com to probably one of our more historic episodes of the show. Kind of an exciting thing. Myself, as a fan of the old school, I am thrilled about this week's show. Today's guest, we have two guests on. It's going to be Barry Darso, formerly known as Demolition Smash, formerly known as the Repo Man, formerly known as Crusher Khrushchev. Tons of other names too. The guy Blacktop Bully, lots of other things he's done, and Bill Axe Edey, also formerly known as the Masked Superstar. Basically, Demolition is on the show today. Wow! And for those of you guys who don't know, Demolition, when I was growing up, was the team of WWF. I mean, they dominated everybody. This was the duo that was brought in. Everyone said, oh, they were brought in to kind of counteract the Road Warriors over in NWA, WCW, but they ended up being a huge moneymaker for WWF at the time. I hate differentiating WWE, WWF, but they ended up being a top attraction. A lot of their legacy has kind of been lost since they've left, because, you know, Bill Edey actually has control over the Demolition name. Maybe there's some feelings. There was a lawsuit with WWF. A lot of things happened. But many fans who watch them remember them. People who saw them on tape remember them. People ask about them. People wonder about whatever happened to them. And here's the cool thing, and this is what I'm excited about. The two of them have not appeared together in years. They haven't spoken to each other. They haven't really been kind of the same environment. So this show is a reunion of sorts. You know, I mean, it's a kind of situation when we talked to Barry first, and I had asked him, I said, we talked to Bill Edey in a while, and he hadn't. So what we did was we set it up. We're going to have Bill on in part two. We have Barry on in just a few minutes. And yeah, talking a little bit about their careers. I'm really excited. I mean, this is one of those weeks where just everything just came together really well, and we're really happy with it. Also, another cool thing, too, and for those of you guys who listen to the Radio Free Insanity every week, we made some changes here in how actually the interviews are done. So it's going to be a lot clearer. You're going to have a lot less feedback and static on the interview, so it'll be a lot easier to hear, too. Mad cool, awesome stuff. Yeah, guys, I don't even know what more to say. This is a really cool thing. As a fan of the 80s, and I watched the Demolition come up, I watched them feud with the Road Warriors. I watched them from their debut. They were actually managed by Luscious Johnny V when they first came in. They had one of the top songs in the Pile Driver album. And then as for Smash, I mean, Smash went on to become Repo Man, which is another famous gimmick. Axe was the Mass Superstar, another big gimmick. Axe was also one of the machines back when Andre the Giant, and they were doing the whole Super Machine, Giant Machine thing with Hogan and Bundy and Stud and that whole feud. So, I mean, two guys, a lot of history in the business, a lot to say, and we are so thrilled to have them here on the show. So without further ado, we're going to begin our first interview here today with Barry Darso. And let's just queue up on the phone, and we'll just jump right into it. All right, are you down? I'm down. Let's do it.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
All right, guys, so join me in welcoming to the show. You might know him as Demolition Smash. You might know him as the Repo Man. Might know him as Hole-in-One. You might know him as Crusher Khrushchev. Whatever you know him as, we know him as Barry Darso, and he's here on Radio Free Insanity. Barry, welcome to the show, man.
James, thanks for having me here. I'm kind of stuck between characters. I don't know how to talk. Do I talk like the Demolition, or do I talk like Crusher Khrushchev or Barry Darso? What do I do?
I don't know. Look, as long as you don't take my car, I am totally cool with you, man.
So how's things going?
It's going great, Barry. I think I told you before we went on the air today, you're actually one of the real favorites of the people here at World Wrestling Insanity, just because, I mean, you're one of the few guys out there who's had more than one very, very memorable gimmick, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. I worked hard on whatever I did.
Do you find that people, what gimmick do you find that people talk to you the most about when they come up to you? What do they call you if they're going to call you something besides your real name?
Usually Smash is the one that they've known me the most as.
Okay.
And now when I go down south, if I go to Charlotte, North Carolina, that's where my wife's from, then people really recognize the Crusher Khrushchev.
Oh, yeah, well, that was more of a southern thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me ask you about this, because you were actually some people don't know this, but you were actually the second Demolition Smash coming in after Randall Cully.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and how you were approached about it?
Well, at the time I was down in, it was WCW, so before that it was the NWA with Jim Crockett Promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a little falling out down there over some money, and I ended up quitting wrestling at the time, and that was when I was Crusher Khrushchev. It was me and Ivan Koloff and Nikita, and I was looking for another job, and I called up Dave Hebner, and Earl Hebner was the one who helped me out, and David went to Vince and said, hey, there's a guy down here, he's a young guy with, you know, big guy that can move and everything, and says, you better take a look at him. And Bill Eadie, I've met a couple times before that. Vince talked to Bill about it, and it ended up being where Vince called me up and said, hey, why don't you come on up here, and I got a job for you if it all works out. And when I met with him, he didn't tell me exactly what the position was, and I didn't know anything about Axe and Smash at the time. And he said, we'd really like to have you come up here, sign a contract, and once you sign the contract, I'll let you know what it's all about. So I said, Vince, you got it, whatever you need. And next thing you know, I was Smash.
That's all.
And I felt bad for Randy, but it just didn't work out for him.
It just didn't click, right?
Yeah, and that's how the wrestling was. When he was one of the Moondogs, it was so successful that everybody recognized him as one of the Demolitions. And Bill is a real professional, Bill Eadie. Mm-hmm. And he just said, this is not going to work out. So when I came in, then it just happened to click.
Did you find that when you were doing it originally, I know one of the big concerns was that it was very similar to the Legion of Doom, and then you had the Powers of Pain coming in. It seemed like there was a number of gimmicks based on that at once. I mean, did that lead to any problems, and how did you deal with that?
Well, it wasn't hard at all, because like I was saying, Bill was such a professional,
mm-hmm.
and I listened to a lot of what he said. And just the way I worked and the way Bill worked, we had no problems at all knowing that we could wrestle and get the gimmick over. And we never even thought of anything like the Road Warriors or anything. We just thought, we're going to make Demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And the people just took to us right away.
That's
in fact, it was hard when we first started, we were, heels, and a lot of the people liked us. And then the more and more we beat people up, the more the people liked us. So that was the hard part, is trying to be heels.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we started being heels and working with, the Hart Foundation and, other teams that were over, then it was no problem. I mean, it was just fun.
Well, you guys actually, on that subject, you guys were involved in one of the more peculiar ways of turning. I think it was Survivor Series 87, I guess it was, or 88. 87, 88, one of the two, when you guys actually attacked Mr. Fuji and you switched off with the Powers of Pain, where they went from faces to heels and you guys went from heels to faces.
Right, and then we got over big.
Yeah.
And, the Road Warriors were huge, and, I broke in the business with those guys. We all went to the same camp, Eddie Sharkey. And when we turned baby faces in the when it was the WWF at the time,
mm-hmm.
we were over big. And at that time, I looked at Bill and I said, yeah, the Road Warriors ain't over like this. Because they were over in WCW and all that stuff, but to get over with you know, the crowd that watched the WWF, that was when you made it big.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's when all of a sudden we got bigger than the Road Warriors.
I mean, you guys were huge. I mean, I remember for a good period, I mean, you guys really ruled the WWF tag team division for a while. I mean, do you think it's weird? I mean, at this point now, I know that there was issues with, I guess, Bill had a lot of creative control and a lot of control over the Demolition name. Do you think that's affected how you guys have been portrayed since being gone as far as, you know, a lot of these legendary things come out and a lot of the guys from past generations get talked about? It seems that almost at times Demolition is kind of skimmed over by WWE for some reason. Do you think that affected it, or do you see that?
It killed it. Mm-hmm. I think to this day, if you know, and I don't know even what the whole story was, because I'm the kind of guy that I move on, and I don't hold any grudges against anybody, and everybody's got to do whatever they got to do to feed their family. But when Crush came in, me and Crush became partners, and Bill had some, you know, big issues with Vince and everything, and he ended up owning the name. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that to Vince, Vince just says, well, hey, I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
And that's when I changed to the Repo Man, and Crush became the other Crush, you know, it wasn't the Demolition.
Mm.
And once that happened, then all of a sudden, you know, why would Vince even mention, you know, Axe and Smash or Crush?
Exactly.
So he just let it go by, and, you know, now it's like, who's the Demolition to him? Because he doesn't own the name.
Yes, it doesn't even, well, I mean, I think if Bill was still using it on the independent scene and things like that after it was all said and done.
Yeah, and You know, Bill was out trying to make money and do whatever he could and keep the gimmick going, but without Vince's backing, Vince is the one who makes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You could be the best gimmick and anything out there, but it doesn't matter without Vince's TV and what it, you know, if Vince pushes you, you will be the best.
There was actually a couple, I mean, towards that period that you're talking about, there was a couple of weird situations when they did bring Crush, and I remember, I mean, I've always remembered this. It was, I think, an episode of WWF Superstars. You guys had come out, and you announced that you were going to be wearing masks from that point on, and then that was, like, 2 weeks later, you were back to the face paint. What was the whole situation with that, and who came up with the idea, and why was it scrapped?
Well, I don't know exactly what it was all about, but I know we were going to bring the Road Warriors in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was disappointed at that part of it, because you know, we were over, I thought we were over big, and we could have even got over even bigger if it would have just kept on going. But when it brought in the Road Warriors, the Demolition was the team that was there for a long time, so they're thinking, bring the Road Warriors in, let's use the Demolition and get them over and make them bigger. Well, when they came in, they didn't get over.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they were almost trying to kill the Demolition gimmick a little bit to, you know, make us heels and make the Road Warriors stronger, and I don't think it ever did work. And I think we could have made a ton of money with the Road Warriors if it was pushed right, and, you know, even keep us apart for, you know, 6 months to a year and let the Road Warriors get over after a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you come from one company to the WWF, it's like, you know, who are these guys? Those fans don't, at that time, didn't watch,
yep,
you know, Ted Turner's wrestling. It was two different fans.
They almost resented it in a way.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we're changing our gimmick for them to help them get over. That really hurt us at the time.
Well, what I didn't get too, especially at that time with you guys with Crush, I think all over the country you guys are doing those six-man tags where it was the three of you against the Road Warriors and the Ultimate Warrior.
Right.
And, you know, you were jobbing all over the country. It just didn't make any sense at the time.
No, and that was, you know, that was the end of our reign right there. And that's, you know, and I'm, you know, and me, I just do whatever, you know, they say. And, you know, I was kind of a company man, I guess. And Bill was looking out for the team and saying, this ain't right. And, you know, and then all of a sudden it got more heat. And, you know, it just, it didn't work.
It's
funny.
And
if they would have just kept the Demolition going and kept the Road Warriors going and eventually meet, I mean, we could have actually been, you know, friends and had six guys that were against everybody. I mean, there's so many different scenarios they could have went with. And at that time, I wasn't in the office talking to whoever was booking it and making the matches. So, you know, I had no say in there at that time. that time.
See, I think what's funny is actually with the Demolition gimmick, it seems like they were hitting on all cylinders, and they kept making good improvements until a certain point. Like, I remember first it was Johnny V managing you guys,
yeah,
and then it switched over to Mr. Fuji, and that was a great step. And then your music, too. You guys went from having just the instrumental to the Rick Derringer song, which is...
Oh, the number one song out there.
Yeah.
I mean, that was huge.
Was that whole album, I think, was... I mean, everyone remembers Rick Derringer, and they remember Robbie Dupree. And I think that that video for the Demolition at the time, I mean, in the wrestling business, everything was so kind of cheesy that
yep.
that video kind of stood out because it really was, and it was all these buildings collapsing and you guys just beating people up over
it. It was like the real thing.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Well, you know, and what was really hard was Axe and Smash was getting over so strong, and we were going against different teams and building angles, and it was like every time we got to a good angle, somebody on the other team that we were going against, something happened where they got sick or they got hurt or... You know, it was like when we were going against Ken Patera and Billy Jack Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then Billy Jack Haynes got, you know, sick, and it was getting to be right where we were going to make a ton of money and really make something happen. And then they had to bring in Hillbilly Jim, who I love Hillbilly Jim, but it was the different angle then.
Well, the whole thing was based on beating up Billy Jack Haynes' cousin, right? By Brady Boone.
Right. And so the whole angle was shot. And then the next one was the Strike Force. It was... You know, Rick Martel and
Tito. Yeah, Tito Santana.
Yeah, well, even before that.
Oh, Tom Zink?
It was Tom Zink and Rick Martel, and they were the hottest babyface tag team. I mean, they, you know, two good-looking guys and could work and everything, and we had the angle with them, and then Tom Zink left, brought Tito in, which, you know, was huge, but if it would have been Tito and Rick to start with,
mm-hmm.
then... You know, he was like a fill-in again.
Absolutely.
And even though he was ended up being better than Tom Zink, it just wasn't the same angle. And that's what happened to us all the way through. You know, and then we started working with the Bulldogs, and that was great. And then, you know, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, and that was huge. And but it was a tough road, and it just happened to work out that way.
Do you think that long-term, like, that kind of people leaving tag teams and unstable tag teams on the roster has kind of led to WWE today not really focusing on tag teams or maybe being gun-shy about putting too much stock into the tag team division?
Well, I think it's just a kind of a change in times. You know, it's,
mm-hmm.
You know, you have six, you know, four guys, and if there's two managers, you got six guys out there, where if it's a single match, you only got two people.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to bring so many different more people to the towns, and you know it's a whole different way of thinking. And I think if you get good singles matches going, it means more than a tag.
Yeah.
Because usually the tag you can almost throw anybody together and build it now because the TV's so strong and make it. Where before the tag teams, you had to take 6 months to a year to really build a tag team.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can do it in a couple of weeks. So the real tag teams aren't that important anymore.
Well, speaking about singles wrestling, one of the gimmicks we said before, that probably one of my top five favorite gimmicks of all time was the Repo Man. Absolutely loved it. Loved the whole gimmick. Loved the whole idea. Tell me about how you were first approached about it and what you thought when you heard it, because on paper it doesn't really sound as great as it ended up playing out with you playing the character.
Right, well, it was funny because the Demolition was just starting to go away, and I met with Vince in one of the buildings, and I was sitting on the couch, and I said, "Hey, Vince, I got another idea." And he says, "Well, you know, let me know." And I said, "You ever see the Batman show with the guys with the masks on? They're real weaselly, goofy guys." I said, "I used to repo cars." And I said, "I'd sneak in at night, and I'd steal the car and, you know, drive it to the car lot." And he says, "You're kidding me." And I says, "How about coming up with a gimmick like that?" And he goes, "Okay, hey, that's a great idea. Let's call it the Repo Man, and let's do it." And the first thing we did was we did a video up in Connecticut where I kicked the window into a car
mm-hmm.
and went in and stole the car. And it was, you know, it was almost like that was the real thing. And then I told Vince, I said, "Let's make it a heel, but so goofy of a heel that kids would like it."
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't ever going to be a serious deal, but it could get top guys over, which I don't mind doing at all. then when it's all said and done, I could go sign autographs for kids in hospitals or do whatever, because it was a real recognizable gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
It was something where, you know, the Repo Man, and a lot of people go, ah, that's the stupidest thing ever. But they knew who it was.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
And then kids, I'd walk out, and the kids were going crazy. I mean, little kids, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old kids. And I loved it. But, you know, I wanted it to go further to where I could really turn to be a baby face,
mm-hmm.
where, like, the Bushwhackers were, you know, so over as baby faces, and that was the goofiest gimmick ever. But, you know, when they went to sign autographs, everybody knew who the Bushwhackers were.
Absolutely, yep.
And I could never get the office to go that far with it, you know. So, but what do you do?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I was going to ask you about the Repo Man gimmick and as far as, you know, going with it is that it seemed like there was a lot of times where you would almost start feuds and then the feuds would kind of just go on for a few weeks and then stop all of a sudden.
Yep.
I know you had the issue with British Bulldog. You had the feud with him where you grabbed the rope and he went for the power slam.
Yeah.
And he ended up almost throwing his shoulder out, and that really didn't seem to last all that long.
Yeah, well, and, you know, another one, I had a match with Randy Savage on, it was like the Monday night
mm-hmm.
show.
But he took his hat.
Yeah, took his hat and stamped on it and everything, and that was the most fun I ever had. And the ratings on that show at that time, I think, were the highest ratings ever at the beginning at that time. So there was interest there because Randy Savage was this, you know, he was the Macho Man, and here's this goofy Repo Man going against him. And people thought, you know, maybe the Repo Man could beat him.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it can't ever happen, you know. And it just, it was interesting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, with things like that, I remember so many feuds that you were involved in back then, it did seem like you were saying before, that it could have been a kind of character that went babyface or went heel, depending on what they wanted to do with it. And I remember specifically one of the times that I saw, and I don't know if this has anything to do with an idea to turn your face, I remember watching Primetime Wrestling and seeing a match between you and Papa Shango.
Yeah.
That was surprising. Was there any reason behind that, or was it just the two of you going out there and doing a match, or was there a thought?
There wasn't much thought when it came to, you know, middle matches or the bottom matches at that time. The big thought was on the main event.
So. Oh, so it wasn't about, like, turning, you know, teasing a babyface turn or anything like that?
No. It was just something to put together to see if it would work and try to make it exciting, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it would have been a match that meant something, they would have built it up for, you know, 4, 5, 6 months. And, you know, now you do an angle and it 2, 3 weeks and, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's the end of it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And they can do that. They got so many guys and the TV's so strong and, you know, the writers are so dang smart. They got so much stuff that they can do nowadays.
Just less attention span for people, I guess, and you just throw more out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to say, too, with that time period that you were in, it seemed like a more fun time period. And I think one of the things about the Repo Man gimmick that surprised many people was that it was so lighthearted compared to the Demolition gimmick, which was such a, you know, kind of a butt-kicking gimmick, you know?
Yeah.
But it allowed you to do other things. Like, I remember one of the things right around, I guess it was WrestleMania 8, you were on Family Feud.
Right.
Doing the Family Feud thing. I don't think that would have worked out if you were still doing Demolition.
Well, yeah, it just, I mean, it was really fun. Whenever I came up with these gimmicks, or if somebody came up with the gimmick, I actually became that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was fun. And I think, you know, Barry Darso just was just a normal guy. And once you created the gimmick, then all of a sudden I completely changed. And that's why wrestling was so fun for me, because I was really never Barry Darso.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barry Darso was around all the time, but that gimmick, you know, for that hour or two or whatever, I could change and be somebody else. And I really got into it.
Kind of immerse yourself in it, not totally.
Yeah, and when I was Crusher Khrushchev, when me and Ivan were together,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, that's when I really learned how to become a professional wrestler, was with Ivan Koloff.
Well, I mean, that must have been, I mean, at that time, you're talking in the middle of the Cold War and you're playing the Russian character. It must have been a lot of heat.
Oh, geez, people really believed it. I mean, we used to go out to our cars, and the tires would be slit, and I mean, oh. And one quick story, Nikolai Volkov and I were partners in Mid-South, and we were wrestling, Nikolai was wrestling Terry Taylor, and at the end of the match, Nikolai, I threw a rope to him, and we hung Terry Taylor over the top rope.
Okay.
And I was hitting him from the outside, and a guy had a knife behind me, and he was coming to stab me, and Nikolai goes, "A knife!" And I jumped out of the way, and the guy started cutting the rope off of Terry Taylor.
Oh, my God, man.
And cut Nikolai's boot, and I took off around the end of the ring, and then the cops grabbed him and everything. But that's how serious it was back then.
It's crazy.
And, you know, now, you know, it's entertainment. You know, a lot of times the guys get mad and go at each other and, you know, do whatever they got to do. But, you know, it's entertainment now, and before it was, like, the real deal.
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah.
But now it is a whole different era and different feeling in the ring.
I was going to say, yeah, nowadays somebody comes out with a knife, you think they're mentally unbalanced. Back then it just meant that you were getting good heat.
Exactly. If somebody came out with a knife and you went back, it was like, holy cow, these guys are getting over.
Absolutely, you know? Get a pay raise.
Oh, another time, Washington, D.C., me and Ivan were wrestling the Rock and Roll Express, and the match went almost an hour, and we screwed them and beat them in the middle of the ring. And you know, an hour-long match.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't care what anybody says, we were in the best shape of our lives. Rock and Roll Express was the easiest team to work with, and they were over like crazy. When we beat them, the whole place got quiet, and Ivan looked at me and goes, "Oh, geez, I'm in trouble now." And when we were walking out, the people started, you know, throwing things and just trying to kill us. And the lights were on us, and all of a sudden something came out of the upper deck, and I saw it coming right at Ivan, and I pushed Ivan aside, and it hit me in the forehead, and it about knocked me out. And Ivan was carrying me back to the dressing room, and he goes, "Barry," he says, "Jesus Christ," he says, "you're bleeding, you're split wide open," he says. I said, "What did I get hit with?" He goes, "You got hit with a hot dog."
Oh, my God.
I said, "A hot dog?" I said, "Did you get it?" He goes, "Yeah, there's a giant bolt in the hot dog."
Oh, man. Wow.
So that's, I mean, that was heat back then.
Imaginative heat, too.
Yeah, it was, but it was fun, you know? It was, you know, can we get out of the building tonight or not? But there's a million stories like that.
So funny, man. Well, I mean, now you get to the point now, I mean, your career goes from that, you go through the demolition phase, and then you go to the Repo Man phase, and you actually reach the point where you're ready to leave WWF
right.
And go to WCW.
Right.
How did that come about, and what finally got you to the point where you said, you know what, maybe it's time to move on?
Well, one of the funnest gimmicks I ever had, and they never pushed it, was the Blacktop Bully.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ric Flair was the booker there, and Arn Anderson, who I love him, he's one of my dear friends. We were talking about how to bring me in, and me and Arn were sitting in the garage, and I said to Arn, I said, "What do I do?" You know, and Rick says, "You know, we'd like to have maybe a truck driver or something." And Arn looks at me and he goes, "You are the Blacktop Bully." And Arn is one of the smartest guys in this business. And I said, "The Blacktop Bully? Yeah, the road's blacktop, and I'm a bully and all that." And we did a scene where I was in jail,
mm-hmm.
and like I broke out and went after Dustin. And that gimmick would have got over if they would have kept pushing it all the way. But they never pushed it.
Do you think the issue, because I remember you had that high-profile situation with Dustin on the first Uncensored. Where
yes.
he had bladed. I mean, what was, I mean, you can explain to that situation to some of the listeners out there who might not know.
Well, what had happened was we were in Uncensored, and we had the truck match, and Mike Graham came up with this match. And Dustin and I were so dang excited because this is the first time it's ever been happening. We had helicopters and trucks and, you know, I mean, it was a big thing. But I think it ended up getting over so big that they didn't want it to get over that big.
Yeah.
Because Dustin and I were not the top guys, but, you know, we were trying to work our way to get up there. And there was barbed wire on the truck. There was nails, there was everything. And we went down the highway at 55 miles an hour wrestling this truck, and we had the time of our life. It was so fun. And we were blood from head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
And we got out, we finally ended the match, it was almost dark, and we got out in this field, and we rolled out of the truck, and we just started laughing, and I've never been so tired in my life. And we thought that this is the greatest thing that ever happened. The next morning, I get home, and Eric Bischoff calls, and he says, you know, Barry, I got some bad news for you. And I said, what? I said, how'd you like the match? He goes, oh, it was a great match. It was one of the best. He goes, but we can't use any of the footage. I said, you got to be kidding me. You can't use footage. He said, no, I'm sorry. He said, I got some heat from, you know, the office people, you know, Ted Turner's office. He says, you guys were bleeding in the truck. I said, yeah. I said, it's uncensored. I said, we're cut. I got cuts everywhere. I was just at the hospital with a tetanus shot, and my legs are bleeding and everything. He goes, well, you're not supposed to have blood on TV. So he says, I'm going to have to let you and Dustin go, and Mike Graham. I said, well, how in the world can you justify that? I mean, if that's the problem, why didn't you fire the camera crew, the producer, the everybody? They should have stopped it. Should have stopped the match, and we could have got Band-Aids on or something, you know? And he said, Barry, just please do me a favor and, you know, go, and I'll hire you back later on. I said, yeah, Eric. I said, we're friends. I said, you know, whatever you need. So that was the end of the Blacktop Bully right there.
Wow.
And, yeah, and it was, and I called up Dustin, and I said, Dustin, what the heck? He goes, I can't believe it. He said, it's just nuts.
Man.
So, I mean, it wasn't like we cut ourselves wide open or anything with razor blade. We were cut open from barbed wire, from nails.
That they put on the truck.
Oh, my wow. God. We were, in fact, the first time Dustin threw me into the wall, there was a nail sticking right in the wall and just sliced my back open. And, you know, I threw him against the fence, and right away the side of his face was bleeding. You know, and then our arms, and, oh, it was brutal. And we got out of there, and Mike Graham looked at us, and he says, that was one hell of a match. And so, and the whole crew, everybody, we hugged. It was like, you know, we did it. We had the match of a lifetime, and then all of a sudden, we got fired over it.
Oh, man. I mean, the irony, too, is that you guys got fired for being uncensored and uncensored.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and that's what I couldn't believe. And then I saw a clip of it. They showed it on TV, and they cut out all the best parts, and it was just ended up being kind of a boring, you know, a couple guys going down the road wrestling.
WCW
but,
style,
you know,
yeah.
Dustin had me hanging upside down outside the truck on the freeway, and I had him hanging out. I mean, it was, we had a whole bunch of stuff.
So. It's a shame. But you did end up coming back, though. You came back as hole-in-one, as kind of a golfer.
Yeah, well, I golf all the time, and Terry Taylor, I told Terry, I said, Terry, you know, let me just be a golfer on here. I'll be like Payne Stewart and hit people over the head with golf clubs. And, you know, that it was tough to have another gimmick. And, you know, then it was just, I had a job.
I was going to say, at that point, I mean, were you getting to the point in your career then when you kind of knew that gimmick was just, you know, settling down and getting to the end there?
Well, yeah, it just, you know, what do? You know, you just you need to help your, you know, pay your bills at home and whatever you can do to have a job by that time. So it, what was really hard for me is, you know, I really believe I have talent and can do whatever anybody wants to, but, you know, if the office doesn't want you and doesn't want to go with you, they're not going to. And, you know, they're looking at it where I've had 5, 6, 7, 10 gimmicks. What in the world are we going to do with this guy? You know? So I don't blame them either.
Yeah, there's one of those guys where, like, that your gimmicks were so memorable that it's kind of hard to go to something new and start from scratch unless it really works.
Right, right. You know, now if I would have stayed away for 3, 4 years and came back and, you know, and came in with something, then it would have worked. But, you know, you just can't be off a half a year and come back. And, you know, the people are so smart.
Oh, absolutely. Know. Oh, totally. But you actually, I mean, one of the coolest things was at WrestleMania 17, they did the gimmick battle royal, kind of brought back all the best gimmicks from days gone by, and you were a participant in that, WrestleMania 17 with WWE. What was that like for you?
Oh, it was the funnest time seeing all the guys again. You know, the one thing that the fans don't realize is when you're with all these guys for years, traveling with them, you know, going out to bars and baseball games and golfing, and, you know, these guys are your brothers. They're your best friends. And after not seeing them for a year or 2 years and coming back and seeing them and seeing all the new guys and meeting them, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know,
absolutely.
It's just a great group of guys. And, you know, and I miss it. I called up the WWE a couple weeks ago, and I'm trying to get a job on the writing committee or being an agent because, I want to be around it.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the coolest things now is that WWE seems to be a lot more open to a lot of the legendary wrestlers of the past. It wasn't like that back when you were there originally. They used to forget about people as soon as they left. They were never mentioned again.
Right. Well, you know, now it's the legend stuff is coming out, and I just signed a contract to do, they got a couple of dolls coming out in October of me.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of excited, you know. I'm kind of excited just to be around it again, and you know, put in a good plug for me to get a job up there with the writing team.
You don't want it from me, man.
Yeah. You got heat up there?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out soon. We should be right. Everything's fair. But no, I mean, we definitely on the site. I mean, the Repo Man, Demolition. I mean, so many gimmicks that people, even now, and we were saying before about the legends, you don't necessarily have had to have even grown up in that era anymore to really know about it. Because, you know, you have the 24/7, you have the video games that have the new wrestlers, you have the legends figures that in many markets are outselling, you know, the current wrestlers figures. So
it's
a great time to really be able to look back and with the DVDs and everything, get a chance to let people know who you are.
Right. So you had Nick Bockwinkle on here not too long ago, huh?
Actually, Nick Bockwinkle, I think, was like the second guest we had back in last October.
Nick Bockwinkle is one classy guy. I love him.
Oh, he was awesome.
Oh, man. You know, just some of the stories and some of the stuff with all the wrestlers. I should write a dang book.
Yeah.
I'd hate to have anybody get mad or anything, though. I could only write the good stuff.
Well, you know what? You can... maybe if you get the WWE contract, they can say yep with one, and then whoever they happen to be mad at the moment, you can write something bad about a Mick Foley or something.
Exactly.
No, but awesome. Well, I mean, Diary, before I let you go, anything you want to say to your fans out there who's still asking about you years later, even after the gimmick, still remember everything that's going on, anything you have to say to them?
I wish I could meet them all and, you know, sign autographs, do whatever, talk to them, but... you know, I sell real estate in Minnesota, and I'm busy as heck doing it. And I'd love to see him again, and hopefully I'll be back somehow into the wrestling world, and I can meet him. I think the fans are what make wrestling, and, you know, I hope a lot of the wrestlers nowadays realize how important the fans are, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the fans are the greatest in the world. I love them all.
Absolutely, man. Barry, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Hey, and do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Tell Bill Eady I said hi.
Okay.
And tell him I'd love to meet with him one day and say hi and have a couple beers and laugh.
I definitely will do that, man.
All righty. He's a good man.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
So there you go, folks. Barry Smash, Repo Man Darso, appearing on the show, letting us know some of his feelings on things that are happening. I hope he doesn't expect my good word for him to help out with WWE, although, I mean, I like WWE. I don't know if they like me, but whatever. I'm a good guy. They're good people. We should all hang out, you know. Maybe I'll mention it to Triple H when we're getting our hair done at the hairdresser. Okay, guys. At this point, I'm going to direct you all to head over to part two. We're going to talk a little bit about some things going on, and then we're going to be joined on the phone by Bill Axe Eady. Second half of Demolition. Completing our reunion this week, and let's put the music on. The famous music, there it is, guys. So head over to part two. Don't get lost. Otherwise, I'm going to send the Axe and the Smasher after you, and the Demolition, walking disaster. So watch yourself. Be well. See you there.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.